Good morning. Thanks for listening to the show here on KJZZ 91.5 in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Now time for the Friday newscap and some voices from the news this week.
As we continue to evaluate options in response to Iranian aggression, the United States will immediately impose additional punishing economic sanctions on the Iranian regime. These powerful sanctions will remain until Iran changes its behavior.
We basically have turned the opinion of Iraqis around, and now we're considered the occupying force. The attention has been taken away from the Iranian government, and I think that's a very unfortunate situation for us.
I appreciate President Trump's decisive action, and he shows the world that he's not going to fool around and just do what President Obama did.
When we indicted Paul Peterson on those multiple felonies, it was not something I did lightly. And so we only did so knowing that we had a reasonable likelihood of conviction. His co-defendant has recently pled guilty to four felonies. And so I am very comfortable and confident in our case. But as to what happens with his political career and what the supervisor is doing, you know, that's kind of their own thing. And that's not going to affect our criminal case in any way.
And with us to talk about the U.S. and Iran, the resignation of Maricopa County Assessor Paul Peterson, and more, our attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera, and Paul Bentz of High Ground. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Paul, let's start off with an observation about President Trump's decision when it comes to Iran and what we've seen the last couple of days. We haven't heard as much bipartisanship as we often seem to hear when it comes to situations like this. Is this unique to President Trump? Is there something else going on here?
I think it's pretty unique to President Trump. But what I think is most surprising is sort of everybody has retreated to their talking points. You read the Democrat statements on this issue. It's, you know, support our troops. The president doesn't have a strategy. Iran has nuclear weapons. And the Republicans are saying the president is right. This is tough. And Obama wouldn't do this. And so we've really sort of – it's even more divisive than usual that everybody's sort of taking those same talking point sheets and handing them out. And that's what we're talking about right now.
Roy, where do you think this came from? Obviously, there's been tension with Iran. There's concern that our relationship with Saudi Arabia is causing some of this. How do you observe what happened? It's what happened in the last couple of days.
Well, you know, this kind of gets back to the question you just asked, where it seems like this is less bipartisan than these kinds of military confrontations usually are. And I think it started off wrongly where, you know, the president didn't consult the Gang of Eight, which normally happens, leaders from both sides. There's been very little information about really why, the justification for why we're doing this. There's been a shifting sort of rationale on that, on whether this is about deterrence or whether this is about preventing some sort of imminent threat. So there's not a lot of information about that. And then I think there's also the concern overall that he may not have a plan, and he hasn't thought through what the repercussions of this would be and how it would affect our national security interests. And so that lack of information, that lack of knowledge, I think has led a lot of people, Democrats, to really question this decision and whether it was the right decision.
Paul, how nervous do you think we should be on a matter like this, that the two sides are seemingly, like they often do, talking past each other and not with each other to try to come to some kind of understanding or at some point some kind of agreement?
Well, at some point there does need to be some sort of understanding between the group. I mean, that's what I think Congress was trying to do with sort of the soft version of the proposal or the vote they had yesterday, where they were saying that we can't declare war unless Congress authorized, but then they put this wiggle word in there, or necessary and appropriate to defend against imminent armed attack. I mean, there was some folks that wanted to push for a full, you can't do this without congressional approval, and other folks that said he can do this unilaterally. And so I think there was some hope, but it really sort of devolved into the partisan argumentation between the two.
Well, you know, I think what the vote showed us is a lot of different things. But one of the things it showed us is that there's not a great appetite for us to go to war with Iran. Rightfully so, right? I mean, we obviously had this debacle in Iraq in the 2000s. You know, Iran would present an even more difficult challenge if we were going to go down that path. And I don't think that the American people, at least in public opinion, want that. And certainly Congress is showing, you know, we don't want to go down this path unless, again, there's really a justification for doing this. And it's up to the administration to show that.
Well, Roy, coming back to the plan concept as to whether there's actually some sort of strategy that the president is wanting to implement or is aware of, you're fairly close, I think it's okay to say, with Congressman Gallego, right, who's a veteran himself. And he came out and sort of said that, too. He didn't come down as harshly on President Trump as he often does. It seemed to be more about, you know, you could be putting our troops in harm's way. By the way, I've been in that situation. Can we come up with some kind of plan? Do you think it's possible not for the administration, but for this president to embrace a plan, whatever it may be?
I'm not sure. I mean, ultimately, you know, the congressman, I think, being a former Marine, somebody who served in some of the sort of harshest conflict during the Iraq War in Baghdad, understands that we have fundamental questions here. We have our men and women in our armed forces that are in the line of fire right now in the Middle East. This decision affects their safety. This decision affects the safety of Americans traveling all over the world. And so we have to have a plan. The decision has been made. Again, there's questions about why the decision was made, but it's already happened. And so we all have to think about, you know, what are the after effects and how do we contain this so that we don't go into an unnecessary war?
On the other hand, I mean, this is a national security issue. Arizona is home to several military bases. You look at Luke, Davis, Monthan, Fort Huachuca, the bases in Yuma and otherwise. And a lot of Arizona was settled by military families who maybe stopped through here at some point and decided to live here. People understand the cost of freedom. People understand what it takes to defend this country. So the question comes down to, what does the public believe this is? Do they believe it's a sort of a military act, or do they believe this is an act in defending the country? I think there are a lot of folks here, even those who serve in harm's way, that think that killing terrorists is a good thing. And so if it's framed that way, that's one way to look at it. But the lack of a plan, the lack of a strategy is what will definitely impact those folks who might have to ship out and actually go somewhere if this were to escalate.
Roy, given sort of what we've talked about in terms of the partisan nature of this discussion and, you know, debate about whether this was the right thing to do or not the right thing to do, safe to say it's not much of a surprise that when it came to the vote in the House yesterday, Arizona's delegation was split along party lines?
It's not a surprise. I mean, we've seen, you know, every moment that a Republican seems to criticize the president, particularly on national security issues, you'll see the next day that person has to walk it back because Fox News, you know, is all over that person. So I'm not surprised that it's stayed that way. You know, there's going to be political repercussions, I think, from this, especially if this confrontation escalates. And I think ultimately the American people are going to have to decide for themselves on whether this decision and what has happened afterwards has made the country safer and whether this has been in our national security interests. I mean, ultimately, that's the real question that voters are going to decide in November, I think.
I think Republicans are wise to stand with the president on this issue, but they got to be careful. I mean, you look at Congressman Gosar tweeting a fake picture of the Iranian president with Obama. That is not helping the Republicans' case on this issue, and they should be trying to separate themselves from that and try to stick to the key issues here, because within their base and within their districts, they will be fine on this issue, but they can't take it too far.
So a name I want to bring up, who someone has brought up in all these circumstances, we have no idea necessarily how he would see on this. He was seen as a military hawk, as Senator John McCain, who at the very least had great foreign policy experience, which with our two current senators we don't have. What difference would it make to have someone like that who was a Republican who probably agreed with Trump on three quarters, if not more, of the issues, to have someone like that to establish some sort of presence on this issue?
Well, I mean, you mentioned that he was a bit of a hawk on foreign policy, certainly was a big proponent of the Iraq War. So I have, you know, me personally have disagreements on sort of that as a strategy. That being said, as someone who was in the military, as someone who I think really thought very carefully about these kinds of issues, military issues, foreign policy issues, it would be good to have somebody like Senator McCain, knowing that somebody like Senator McCain is there and thinking about these things. I mean, my concern, I think, just seeing this and how this has been covered, is I'm just not sure that the people in the White House on the national security team, and certainly Trump himself, are really thinking things through, not only because they may not have the knowledge, the necessary knowledge about the region and the history and why we got there, but also really strategically thinking about, again, what the repercussions would be. I think that's the concern. Having an elder statesman, I think, would always be helpful, again, even if fundamentally he had a philosophy that maybe is different than mine.
I think the state of Arizona and the United States sorely miss Senator John McCain. And this is a great example of what it means, as Roy said, to have an elder statesman, someone that you could look to opine on these issues and have expertise. We're sorely lacking in expertise in these types of areas with somebody you can turn to. And this military is one of them, but there's many others as well that we don't have that voice to look to offer either a counterbalance or validate what's going on. I don't know where he would have stood on this issue, but I do know that he would have been a key voice that people would have listened to.
Paul, how do you see this issue playing? Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen next, but how do you see it playing out in the Senate race that would fill the last 2 years of Senator McCain's term? Martha McSally, we've seen, has stood pretty closely with the president on this one.
Yeah, she talked about specifically that he was responsible for the deaths of hundreds of American soldiers during the Iraq War and hostile activities throughout the Middle East. And Mark Kelly came back and said, you know, we must have an operational and strategic plan and pointed to his experience in the region. So, I mean, Mark Kelly is not standing side by side with the congressional Democrats talking about all of this. He's walking it back a little bit because I think he sees that this is a key issue. But he does have that military experience that I think helps give him credibility in that area.
Yeah, I mean, I again, thinking about how this is going to play out with the elections, I think ultimately, I mean, let's just sort of get the centerpiece of this is the public support a war with Iran? I think public polling says that they do not, right? So if that were to occur, I think that probably would be a negative for the president politically. But leaving that aside, I mean, how this proceeds and escalates, obviously, we've seen Iran already respond with missiles and pulling out of the Iran deal. You know, we're talking about sanctions now. I mean, this is going to go on for a while. And I think it ultimately then comes back to what Mark Kelly referred to, which is what is the plan here? You know, what are we going to do here to protect our national security interests going forward? And again, I have real concerns that the president may not have a plan because he hasn't always demonstrated having a plan in a lot of these kinds of decisions.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back with more coming up. This is the NewsCap with Mark Brody, Roy Herrera, and Paul Bentz. We'll move away from foreign policy. We'll come to state in just a moment. It's the NewsCap on KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guest today, Paul Bentz of High Ground, and attorney and former congressional staffer, Roy Herrera. All right, guys, we're moving out of Iran, and we're going to move to Maricopa County for a moment. Paul Peterson, who is up on some very interesting charges, Roy, has decided to actually resign his position. That doesn't mean he's not going to continue to follow up on lawsuits. We had Attorney General Brnovich, who's still pursuing charges against him. After all this fight, what do you make of Peterson finally resigning? And as a second question, do you think we're going to move away from this being an elected position?
Well, on the first question, and this is me sort of putting my former criminal prosecutor hat on a little bit, is I think things probably changed for him internally when his co-defendant decided to plead guilty and cooperate. At least that's what the news reports have indicated. And so anytime that happens, I mean, that puts you in a pretty tough position in trying to defend yourself from the criminal charges. And so I imagine in his thinking that he's thinking he needs to focus more on that because that obviously is going to be fundamentally a tough thing for him. In addition, you know, you had the supervisors uphold the suspension. So that was the other thing. I mean, the writing was sort of on the wall. I mean, he wasn't going to be able to go back. And so it's not surprising, I think, to me that he decided to resign. To the second question, I mean, we've talked about this, I think, on this very show about whether these positions should be elected or not. I mean, it's my view that they probably shouldn't. But that would, again, change the, you know, we'd have to change the law in the state in order to make that happen. So anytime changing a law that fundamentally is, you know, you're asking a lot, I think. So it may not change, at least not in the short term.
It's a change to the Constitution, yeah. In fact, because it's one of the constitutional offices that are laid out for every county. So it'd be a heavy lift to change it, that's for sure.
So are we going to miss anything with Paul Peterson out of the picture?
Well, I think it's been a rough patch for Paul Peterson. His co-defendant pled guilty. His wife filed for divorce. His triplex was sold and the assets were seized. And then the bar announced yesterday or I think the day before that they're going to investigate him as well. So it's a rough time right now, I think.
So bad news didn't come in threes.
No, it came in like quintuples. But I think that it was a good move for the supervisors. They held their ground. The further investigation found messages between Peterson and the birth mothers. There's a lot to be, there was where there's smoke, there's fire, I'd say. And I don't think anyone's going to blame them for wanting to do something about that.
Do you think that there will be ramifications into the future of how the supervisors handle this? Not to criticize them, but the way that they went about suspending him, then they upheld the suspension and a lot of the acrimony there. Paul, do you think that lasts? I mean, are there going to be future episodes where this comes into play, do you think? Or is this maybe just a one-time thing?
I think this is more of a one-time thing. They stood pretty united on this issue. I don't think it's going to be a political issue going forward for these races next year on the supervisor races. I think that the general public is on their side on this issue. I think part of the thing on the Republican side was they needed to get Peterson out early enough to give someone a chance to actually hold on to this assessor seat. Otherwise, it definitely would have been vulnerable for a Democrat takeover.
Okay, now, as a point of personal privilege, Roy, let's talk about the first day of the legislative session. Mark's favorite day. He wears a boutonniere usually on the Monday of the State of the
and
State.
And my bolo tie.
Exactly.
I don't.
So, Roy, obviously there are a lot of different things to talk about. The question that comes to mind for me, anything in the upcoming session you can see bipartisanship coming out of the box?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that is hanging over all of this is that we have a huge budget surplus, you know, $650 million, something like that, right? It could be even more than that. And so anytime there's extra money to play with that you allow politicians to play with, there's a lot of ideas on how that money should be spent. And certainly we've had a debate about education funding in the state over the last several years, and I think that is one area where perhaps if there is going to be an increased investment in education using some of that money, that maybe if it's done in a certain way, it could be done in a bipartisan fashion. I think there's also some talk about maybe transportation infrastructure investment that could result in some bipartisan support. So there's a few things. I mean, again, you know, when you have this extra pot of money to spend, you can come up with very creative ways to spend it, and if maybe done in a bipartisan manner.
I think it's going to be a lot of one-time. I don't think there's going to be a lot of long-term obligations to the state, but I think we'll see school safety funding. I think we'll see special needs. I think we might see some unique transportation funding. I think one thing that they should strongly consider that would be very popular is exploring the idea of what can they do to help underperforming schools, putting money into a pilot program or something like that that actually helps these underperforming schools do better and put more money towards those, because we've seen over and over the ones at the poverty level and others need extra help, and putting money there would reap the best results. And that would be maybe a two-year program so that you're addressing that issue long-term. You can look at that as an issue in the 2022 election.
One of the fights that we have seen in the past, especially when there is extra money hanging around, is a fight over actually the numbers, like how much money do they have to spend? And of course, it's hard to craft a budget when you don't have your bottom line number. Do either of you see that itself as a major fight, either between Republicans and Democrats or between the governor's office and the legislature, as we've seen in the past?
It could, because, you know, one, where there's not certainty on what the actual number is. Again, it's been anywhere between $600 million and $1 billion that we might have left over. And then there's always the question of, you know, we don't necessarily want to spend all of that because we want to have something left over for a rainy day if there's an economic downturn or something like that. So, you know, the governor, I think, really believes in that idea. And so I would imagine that he doesn't want to spend all of it because he wants to keep some left over. So that may be a result, that might result in some sort of tension between the legislature and the governor's office, perhaps, right, on how that's spent. But, you know, the other thing that's kind of also hanging over all of this is that there's a prediction that the chambers may flip in control after this year, right? So this might be the last legislative session we have in a while where Republicans control both chambers. I mean, I think the House is on the verge of flipping to Democrats, and even some sort of insiders and political analysts are already predicting that's going to happen. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how Republicans respond to that, right? I mean, do they try to be more partisan in order to preserve their majority on certain things? Do they work in a bipartisan manner? That is a real, I think, fundamental question about how the session goes.
To that point, I think there's only one important number, and that's 8-4, as in August 4th. They moved the primary up to August 4th. The legislature, it's going to be a short session, I think, because they got to get out and campaign. To Roy's point, they are potentially every seat's in play. They're one of these chambers might flip. They got to get out on the campaign trail. I can't imagine they're going to spend a lot of time quibbling over the numbers. I do think there might be some strategic planning there on what they want to spend the money on. But at the end of the day, these legislators got to get out on the campaign trail and start talking to voters if they think they're going to hold on to their seats.
Roy, you'd mentioned education funding, and I spoke with Senate President Karen Fan this week, and she kind of hinted that while this year is obviously the last installation of the 20 by 2020 plan, the teacher pay raise, she indicated that there might be some room to even maybe go a little bit above that number. Any sense that that could be something that maybe could get bipartisan support, that giving teachers or other folks who work in schools more money than they had expected?
I mean, there's certainly a chance for bipartisan support for something like that. I mean, Democrats do want an additional investment in education. I think the question always comes down to, though, is whether that investment is sustainable. The argument on the Democratic side is always like, yes, you can infuse, you know, more money into the school system, but is it something that's going to be long-term? Is it something that's going to be sustainable? Or is this just a one-time thing? And I think those are the kind of questions that are going to be asked if there's going to be some sort of bipartisan compromise. But certainly, more money into schools is something I think both sides can get around.
I think that it would be a great opportunity for bipartisanship. The question is, will the Democrats swing and miss again? They swung and missed when they opposed the 20 by 2020 plan because they wanted to keep it partisan, and they basically gave the governor a complete win on that. And he's been able to run on that. The House and Senate, they talked about that in their latest plans, that they're going to complete that promise to the people. And I think if there's more money to be had, I think that it'd be wise for Democrats to support that. But I think the concern is they're going to go out with a 6/10 and probably a massive increase to the income tax on the highest wage earners, and I think their focus is on that. So if they are only eyes on the prize on that and don't look at other funding opportunities, I think it would be a big mistake.
Well, how does that dynamic potentially change in an election year then? Is the perception a little bit different then?
Well, I mean, just referencing what I think Paul just mentioned, you know, we may have another InvestNet initiative. And, I mean, certainly that's being talked about by several groups. So the question I think for Democrats is going to be, you know, are we going to support that exclusively, or is it going to be, you know, yes, we are going to support this bipartisan effort for additional education funding at the legislature while also doing this initiative? I mean, I agree. I mean, just looking at this from a political standpoint, I'm not sure being against an increase in funding for the education system is a good idea for either side.
One brief question, Paul, to follow up on what you said about, I mean, best laid plans, a short session. And our listeners probably don't care about how long the session is per se. But of course, we saw in the previous session, Paul Boyer, Heather Carter, others, we've seen lawmakers hold out to some extent in the past. But this was the most effective one I can remember in very recent years in terms of really holding up the budget, knowing that it is an election year. Could we see something like that happen? And especially because knowing the lawmakers want to get out of session early, we may see some lawmakers say, this is a real pet project of mine. This is really vital to the state, whatever it may be.
I think it was a very effective tool last time. I think there'll be some folks that do it this time. If they're wise, I think it will be in the realm of education. I think they've got to find Republicans in particular in these swing districts need to find something to be in favor of when it comes to education. If they think they're going to hold on to their seats, it's going to be an incredibly competitive election with high voter turnout. And they have to point to something, especially if they're going to be opposed to invest in ed or say that's not a good idea. People are going to say, well, what is your idea? And they have to have something to point to.
Roy, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I think certainly in an election, you're always wanting to create wedge issues, right? You always create a situation where you're, you know, for something and the other side is against it. And I think either side probably wants that, right? But perhaps because it would be in their interests for that not to be the case, that maybe they come together and in some kind of bipartisan fashion. But of course, you know, at the beginning of session, we talk about bipartisanship and it never really happens. So I guess we'll see sort of how it turns out.
Paul, anything in particular you're expecting or hoping to hear from the governor on Monday?
Well, I'd love to hear the governor talk about some long-term plan to fix our roads. I mean, we have not done anything about improving funding or increasing funding for road maintenance since 1991. That was the last time. That's 29 years ago. We've basically doubled in population since that time. Cars have become more fuel efficient. We've got a ton of hybrids and electric vehicles on the road that aren't paying for the road maintenance. And I don't know if you've driven around, particularly in the rural areas in the state, there is a ton of roads that require this maintenance, and we just don't have the funding to do that. That's something that I think is bipartisan. I think it cuts across everybody. I think potholes are nonpartisan and something should be done about them.
Roy, how about you?
Well, I mean, I wholly agree. I mean, we are one of the fastest growing states in the country. And obviously, all those new people mean we need, you know, more roads, improving roads, maintaining our roads. We haven't raised, you know, gasoline taxes since like the 1990s.
91, yep.
So, you know, in order to respond to that growth and modernizing the state, I think we probably need more investment in that. And so talking about that, I think, would be useful. I think the other thing that I would think about here, too, is we also have to think about healthcare a little bit. I mean, we have a lawsuit right now that could invalidate the entirety of Obamacare that the Attorney General, by the way, is supportive of. Well, what is the response to that? Let's say that that is a successful lawsuit. It has been successful so far in the Fifth Circuit if it goes to the Supreme Court. If we don't have rules that protect, for example, people with pre-existing conditions, what's the state's response to that?
Guys, very, very briefly, anything, any topic that the governor might bring up that people might be surprised he's bringing up in a state of the state?
I'd love to see some discussion about gaming. That's the dark horse that's not being discussed that long term. The compacts expire in the next couple of years. And this is something that has been discussed before. I don't know if he's going to do anything about it, but that would be the one that would be surprising to see.
Or anything for you?
Well, I mean, I'd love for him to talk about climate change, right? I mean, we had a water deal
that
last legislative session. It would be a surprise. But just, you know, every day when I look at the fires in Australia and the things that are happening all over the world, you know, we live in the desert right now. What is our plan for that? Because I happen to believe that is a reality, and how are we going to react to that over the next several decades?
All right, that's attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera, Paul Bentz of High Ground. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you
for having us.